This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Construction is underway in Racine County on the first elements of Foxconn's massive factory complex. Plans call for the factory to employ thousands of workers who will, at first, assemble television sets, but later are expected to build high-tech glass screens for electronic devices.
The Foxconn development elicited an unprecedented state incentive package, with advocates saying it has the potential to transform the economy of the region. But a new report out says another part of the manufacturing sector is already having a transformative effect.
Katie Stanton is the program manager for the Urban Manufacturing Alliance, which authored the State of Urban Manufacturing Report. Marcus White is vice president of civic engagement for the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
So what's the significance of what you would term small batch manufacturing, and why do you think it is so important to quantify the data surrounding it?
The State of Urban Manufacturing Report is a research project that the Urban Manufacturing Alliance has spearheaded in six different cities because we really wanted to understand what manufacturing looks like today. You know, folks still have a perception of manufacturing being big, dirty, repetitive, boring, and we just don't think that that's the case anymore. But we really wanted to dig in and understand what these new kind of manufacturers looked like. And so we were able to go into these six different cities, of which Milwaukee was one, work with community partners to really understand first the landscape of manufacturing in Milwaukee, and then dig into these small companies, not only their workforce demographics, but their barriers to scale, what their hopes for growth was, how they define themselves. And so now we're really looking at this new kind of manufacturer, what you reference as small batch producers. And we're seeing these more and more in cities because manufacturing, as times have changed, has shrunk, whether it's due to technology, whether it's due to space constraints. So we're really excited to sort of see what this data says about these new manufacturers.
Why was Milwaukee that one of the, you know, you said there were six cities where you did this deep dive, as the kids say these days. Why was Milwaukee an important one to include in this study?
Well, a lot of the cities that we included were in the heartland. You know, Milwaukee, just like many other cities like Detroit and Cincinnati, Baltimore, have sort of been ravaged by outsourcing.
There
you go. It was a combination. And so Milwaukee provided a really good opportunity to take a look at what was once such a powerhouse and really still is. There's so much mm-hmm. manufacturing still located here. But we also have a lot of our network is based in Milwaukee. We have some really strong partners, not only the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and our other sponsor, Bader Philanthropies, but folks in the industrial bid community, workforce nonprofits. So we really saw an opportunity to leverage our network here, and then also because of the historical context.
What's in it for the Greater Milwaukee Foundation to get this kind of data?
Well, I think similar to what Katie just described, that just given this region's legacy, I think that's what appealed to us at the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and to Bader Philanthropies to support this work, to be part of this national cohort. But we know manufacturing is still a strength here. It's one of our largest sectors for employment still in this region, and we're a national leader in that. One question we often ask is the manufacturing a strength upon which we should continue to build, or is it industry of the past that we're too dependent on? I don't know that there's an answer to that yet, but what we saw in this study is that there is indeed manufacturing happening in different ways, sometimes in smaller ways, but a lot of larger manufacturers are part of this study too. We saw what I think a lot of people see, that there is this growing maker movement, a movement that's been here for some time. And I think we've all just sort of noticed its growth. And when you have community events and things like Night Market that Milwaukee puts on, and you see all of these local artisans, artists, and others, tells you something is brewing. And so when we had the opportunity to support this and be part of it, we were very enthusiastic to understand what is going on? How big is this sector? Is it an area that has potential for significant economic development in our region? And what do we all need to do to support that?
So is this in the Venn diagram of economic sectors? Is this the overlap between the creative economy and the manufacturing industry?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. We ask a question in this study about how the respondents defined themselves over time at founding, and then when they took the survey, and answers ranged from artisan to maker to manufacturer to business person. And it was really interesting to see how those shifted and changed, particularly as companies grew. So at founding, folks might consider themselves a maker. 2 to 6 years later, they consider themselves a business person. And not only does that sort of speak to your intersection, the Venn diagram, but it also speaks to how organizations, whether in city government or nonprofit or community-based organizations, need to sort of understand to help these companies grow and for them to become economic development drivers.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are obviously a lot of economic analyses of the various sectors of the workforce, the various sectors of the economy. Is this a case of, you know, an industry kind of sneaking up on us, and there's just not a lot of data that's been out there that's quantified the impact yet?
I would say so. So, you know, studies often rely on national level data, maybe Bureau of Labor Statistics or NAICS codes. And again, what we were trying to get at is those folks who don't necessarily fit into that definition, maybe because they're so small that they're missed by those surveys, or maybe because their processes are new and innovative and, again, don't fit into those general NAICS codes. So,
I mean, is it a trick when some of them just don't self-identify as manufacturers?
That could be part of it, certainly. Or perhaps they're just one person, and mm-hmm. so they really slip under the radar.
Well, I think also that there's been this growth due to just the changes in commerce. And, for instance, one of the national sponsors of this work is Etsy. And, for instance, I just purchased a steel sign from a maker in California through Etsy. And just in recent years, I think we've all become accustomed to that, and it has changed, I think, the potential for artists, for makers. They are becoming businesses or manufacturers in some case, but I think the changes in commerce have allowed that kind of growth. And again, for us locally, what's the role for all of us to play in supporting that growth so that, for instance, mm-hmm. I don't continue buying signs from a guy in California?
Right. And I think there's implications there. You know, some folks who are small batch producers or makers or however they identify themselves won't want to grow. And they're mm-hmm. a very valuable part of the ecosystem. But those folks who are perhaps looking to grow, and in Milwaukee, about 94% of the respondents are looking to grow, we really have to help service providers and technical assistance providers understand how those people need support and what they need in order so that Marcus can buy a sign in Milwaukee and the company who makes it can hire their next 2 to 5 to 10 employees.
Well, so we've kind of been talking about this from the aerial view here, but let's talk about it from an on the ground sort of standpoint. What are some of the numbers that might jump out at people about, you know, both the numbers of people in this sector and the economic impact that they have?
So our study was a snapshot in time. We surveyed about 100 makers and manufacturers across the city of all sizes. And I think two things really stood out to me. First, the statistic I already listed, which 94% anticipate to be either significantly or slightly larger than they are now. I can't give you a total number of what that would be, but let's say every one of them wanted 2 to 10 employees. That's 200 to 1,000 employees mm-hmm. if we're able to support them in the right way. And that is certainly would have an effect on our neighborhoods. I think the other statistic that I'll say is that 94% of our respondents relied on personal investment to start their company, to grow their company. And that has a lot of implications for growth, but also for equity. You know, we're looking at communities. I should say that manufacturing is still, we believe, a pathway out to the middle class and out of poverty. It pays living wages. It is family sustaining. But if folks are not, if they're not part of a wealthy network and they can't even start their business, how are they supposed to create jobs that can help lift others out of poverty? And so we really encourage, that was an encouraging finding, or an interesting finding, I should say, that we want to encourage people to look deeper into.
Well, and of course, we hear a lot about the kinds of incentive packages that large manufacturing companies receive in efforts to lure them here. I won't name any by name, except people are obviously thinking of the word Foxconn. Mm-hmm. But what sorts of supports, as you dug into this data, what sorts of supports do you think Or were the people that you spoke with saying would really make the difference to these smaller entrepreneurs?
Well, to keep banging on the same drum, access to sort of flexible financing. So rather than your traditional bank loans that require a lot of capital, really trying to look for creative partnerships between philanthropy, nonprofits, city government, other lenders, in order to give these businesses the sort of flexible capital. And I know the city of Milwaukee has a very successful partnership with Kiva, which is very encouraging and exciting to have learned about. And we're seeing that in a number of different cities. But thinking about how to expand that and to help, you know, get folks beyond the 5 to 10,000 range and between the 50 and 500,000 range.
In terms of their sales? That's...
In terms of, sure, sales, but more so the amount of loan that they would need.
I see. Yeah.
Right. And so is there a public policy implication for this? Is this, you know, creating a climate where that sort of thing is more readily available?
Well, I think there's great opportunity there. And Mitch, there's two things I want to do. There's four things stuck out for me about the challenges that business owners and makers are feeling. And then there's the contextual piece, too, in this particular to this region. So as Katie said, financing is one of those. Access to capital was a theme in this report. Finding new customers was a theme. The need for employees, and that may get even more difficult. And space. And I think all of those things, capital, finding new customers, employees, and space are the types of things where local government, state government, philanthropy, nonprofit sector, chambers of commerce, and other business owners can all collaborate to help promote those locally produced goods and find those new customers, to come up with new, more patient financing models. Obviously, we're willing to do that, whether it's a large screen manufacturer or a giant facility for professional sports. We have a commitment here to putting public dollars into those. And we're certainly not going to argue that that's a bad strategy. The report actually acknowledges that, indeed, local communities still need to go after large employers. That's always going to be part of the mix. But what else can you do to begin building wealth and, frankly, creating ways for innovation and creativity to become a business? This community, with its history of manufacturing, is a community that innovates. It's what we've been like for a long, long time. And what we see here is that on a smaller scale, that spirit, that sort of Milwaukee's spirit of being the workshop to the world, continues. So as a matter of policy, what can we all do to support those things? In the contextual piece, Kay talked about equity. We're in a region right now, our four-county metro area is one-third people of color. When you look at people under age 25 in our four-county region, it's 45% people of color. And preschoolers in our four-county region are now majority people of color. Our region's future is tied to communities of color. And one thing we heard in the study is that people of color who are trying to make a go of it didn't feel like they had the same kind of access to financing and capital. And that's something we have to be very intentional about, because we can build this region to be one where everyone thrives. And I think that's going to be part of the mix. How can we be more intentional about the kind of tools that are needed and who can access those tools?
Milwaukee is one of six cities that you studied in these kinds of terms. Are there appropriate comparisons to make to some of the other cities that you dug into, that, you know, places where they're doing innovative things that Milwaukee ought to be looking at?
Yeah, so we've released our two of the other cities, Philadelphia and Detroit, so far. The other three, Cincinnati, Baltimore, and Portland, will be forthcoming in June. And there are a lot of similarities between the cities. And the report goes into a number of different examples of different promising practices or existing programs around capital access. There's a lot of good examples in there. The city of Rochester, which obviously wasn't included, has a really good program, another Kiva partnership. Another one is the Inclusive Startup Fund in Portland. This is a partnership between the county, the city, and the state, where they intentionally created a pool of funds for entrepreneurs, particularly of color, who are looking to start hardware businesses. And there's a competition, and there's cohorts, and they support each other. But each of those entities put in a significant amount of money to seed that fund, and then it comes back to them as well.
At this stage, with the data that you've now seen, do you come out of it with some level of optimism about what is possible?
For sure. The report to me was far more encouraging than I was expecting. I was expecting, I think, I might have hypothesized that we'd hear a lot about struggle. And that's in there, but there is far more optimism and hope. So to me, that's what's really exciting, that it's even more vibrant of a sector than I might have anticipated. So I think there is great potential there in all kinds of ways. And one of the things the report mentions is perhaps unlike some of the cities that Katie just cited, we don't have what the report refers to as someone at the helm. And that might be a next step for our region for a public-private partnership. We need someone at the helm who can pull together these things, who can say, if we're going to invest in these types of things, these are also worth investment. And so I think that's a next step for us. But it is an exciting time. And again, I had mentioned before that there are all kinds of places we all bump into events with local manufacturers. And so I think everybody knows that there's something cool going on. How can we support it and grow it?
Well, thank you so much for sharing this report with us and getting us thinking about it as well.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Mitch.
Marcus White is Vice President of Civic Engagement for the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. Katie Stanton is the Program Manager for the Urban Manufacturing Alliance, which authored the State of Urban Manufacturing Report. You'll find a link to it at wuwm.com.